This is Sarah Lemon, author of the Whole Dish blog and food writer for the Mail Tribune newspaper in Southern Oregon. This podcast is produced for the Mail Tribune and Rosebud Multimedia. You can find it online at www.mailtribune.com/podcasts and on my blog, www.mailtribune.com/wholedish. I find that the New Year's adage, out with the old and with the new, applies in a pretty relevant way in my kitchen. And of course, we all try to make those resolutions toward eating healthier, maybe eating a little bit less after the excess of the holidays, maybe even cooking a little bit more from scratch instead of relying on convenience foods. But I also certainly take stock after the excess of the holidays when I've likely purchased more ingredients than I actually need for festive meals and entertaining. There's always something that just didn't make it into the feasts. And this year it happened to be a very large package of button mushrooms, largest package I've ever seen that they put together in-house at Food for Less in Medford, and marked down to a flat price of $3.99, I believe. It's about 3 pounds of just the plain old white button mushrooms, grocery store variety. But that was a low price for those. And my husband initially bought them to make kind of a bulk batch of ragu to put in some gift baskets with some pasta and some bottles of wine for some friends as little holiday gifts, and just didn't have the oomph to get the mushrooms chopped, cleaned and chopped and cooked to go into these jars of sauce. So we were left with this giant mess of mushrooms and brainstorming ideas of what we should do with them, cream of mushroom soup, stroganoff. And of course, this was something that should call for a lot of mushrooms. And I mentioned Duxelles, which Will had never heard of, and I've actually never made, but certainly tried a number of times, a number of locations. And it's essentially a very, very finely minced and sautéed mushroom mixture that basically emerges from the process as a vegetarian pâté, essentially. It's just butter, the mushrooms, some onion, garlic, herbs, salt, pepper, and just a little splash of some kind of wine or spirit. Madeira is traditional, which I don't keep on hand, but I knew that the other cooking wines that I do keep on hand would be just fine in this. And you like the sound of that, because I mentioned we could kind of put it in little pastries, puff pastry turnovers, or kind of put it on in grilled cheese. It's sort of, the texture is even denser than pesto. Of course, it isn't that pretty bright green. It turns out to be very, very dark brown color, but it's savory and just absolutely delicious if you're a mushroom fan, which we are. And so here's how the dish comes together. One of the redeeming things about it is all the chopping, mincing can be done in the food processor, which I don't use my food processor all that often for just chopping things in my everyday meal preparation. But for something like this, big batch, it really, really comes in handy. And so it's going to go in batches, actually starting with an onion. And I used a white onion. A yellow onion would also be fine here. And peeled that. Cut it, I think, into quarters, and so it would just move more easily in the food processor, processed that down. And then I added about a third of the mushrooms we had, which, as I said, I was estimating this is about 3 pounds. So I'm going to guess it was close to a pound. And I have the large Cuisinart food processor, so that all pretty much fits in there. If you have a smaller mini chopper, you're going to need to do this in numerous batches. Of course, you don't have to make such a big batch. The ratio to the butter and the mushrooms is adjustable, of course. So I quartered the very large mushroom, or halved or quartered the very large mushrooms before I put them into the bowl of the food processor with the already kind of coarsely chopped onion, and pulsed that until it's very finely chopped. And in fact, some of the mixture at the very bottom near the blade was almost turning into like paste, like pesto. Meanwhile, in the largest cast iron skillet I have, I had started to melt about a half a stick of butter, maybe even a little more, melted that down until it was a good pool of butter in there, kind of bubbling. You want a lot because that's what lends the flavor and the texture. I mean, this is creamy and smooth like a pate, and actually very firm when it's cold. It needs to be taken out and brought to room temperature to really be spreadable for serving as a dip or spread with crostini as an appetizer. So into that pool of butter in my cast iron skillet, dumped the first batch of minced onion mushroom mixture, and then gave it a few stirs, made sure it was simmering pretty well on medium heat. And this is going to take a while for all of the moisture to cook out. That's the goal. The liquid to evaporate, it's going to be steaming as it's cooking and you're stirring, and for the mushrooms to just absorb all that butter and the other seasonings. So back to the food processor, I peeled about 4 good-sized garlic cloves, threw those in the food processor, and just pulsed that just a couple of seconds to just coarsely chop them again, and repeated the same process with the mushrooms, wiping off the ones that had any visible dirt. I don't wash my mushrooms under running water when I'm cooking them, and the theory behind that is if you're going to be cooking a mushroom with the goal of evaporating the water, which is usually the finished result that most people want, it doesn't make any sense to immerse the mushrooms before cooking in water, because they're just going to soak it up and you just have that much more water to evaporate. It dilutes the flavor. So the typical school of thought with mushrooms is to just wipe off any visible dirt. With more delicate mushrooms, certainly wild foraged mushrooms, you can use like a pastry brush to brush off any little bits that are on the outside. And because, of course, these are cooked, I mean, anything that is present on the exterior of the mushroom is going to be neutralized in the cooking process, I mean, provided it's an edible mushroom, obviously. So after pulsing my second batch of mushrooms with the garlic, I checked on the pan on the stove to make sure that was simmering away well, again, giving it another few good stirs before adding more. And I pushed all that first batch to the sides of the skillet and melted another couple tablespoons of butter in the center, and then added the second batch from the food processor to that, and actually let that kind of simmer in the freshly melted butter, and leaving the sort of ring of previously sauteed mushrooms intact around the edge. Instead of stirring them all together, I wanted that second batch to kind of cook down and again absorb the butter and release some of its liquid before combining the two. And I think I had a few mushrooms left over. Like I said, I was estimating this was 3 pounds. I think I put the last few in the food processor and pulsed those again to be finely chopped. We're looking for finely chopped mushrooms here. And after 5 minutes or so, again, stirring in the center of that pan, the second addition of mushrooms, this mixture starts to become aromatic. You can really smell the mushrooms, smell the sauteed butter. It starts to darken in color, going from like a gray almost to kind of a dark brown color. And if you did this with cremini mushrooms, it would be an even richer color than it would be with just plain button mushrooms. That would be probably the next most flavorful mushroom to use in this recipe. Some of the flavor comes from salt, white pepper. You season to your taste. I added about a teaspoon of salt to these, about 3 pounds of mushrooms, I would say. Half a teaspoon of freshly ground white pepper. And I've mentioned in previous podcasts that I like to use white pepper, which is becoming easier and easier to find simply because it's just milder in flavor. You don't notice the black flecks from freshly ground black pepper in your dishes. And I just find it's a nice, you know, not too spicy, but just lends that little bitter note, that just tiny bit of heat that you're going for with pepper. I also added some dried thyme. You could obviously use fresh herbs in this, but I always have dried thyme just close at hand in my spice cabinet. And I find that it's one of the dried herbs that I like the best, that just seems to translate the best between its fresh and dried state. And I've mentioned also in previous podcasts that what I like to do is shake the leaves out into the palm of my hand and then rub my palms together, crushing those leaves even smaller and releasing their essential oils. So, you know, you can really taste them, smell them, because of course, dried herbs lose quite a bit of that aroma that you get from fresh herbs. So added that, about a teaspoon of salt, half a teaspoon of freshly ground white pepper. I think it was maybe a half a teaspoon of thyme leaves. And then I also grated some fresh nutmeg into the mixture. Really, really like nutmeg, always freshly grated in a lot of savory dishes, things with cheese. Certainly mushrooms, sautéed greens, hearty winter greens, I think really benefit from this flavor. It's just a nice sweetness. It's also slightly spicy and earthy that just goes so well on my palate with a lot of dishes. So now I was at the point where I incorporated all the mushroom mixture together, the first batch processed with the onion, the second batch processed with the garlic. And a lot of recipes also call for shallot, which I just didn't happen to have on hand. Shallot is sort of that intermediate flavor between onion and garlic that is really nice in a lot of traditional French preparations, which this is certainly things that are sauteed in butter. It goes very well in a traditional white sauce. A bechamel sauce almost always has shallot. I just didn't have that. So I find, you know, using both the onion and the garlic, you know, it doesn't totally replace the shallot, but it very closely approximates, you know, the flavor profile you're going for. Just kept stirring every couple of minutes. This mixture again is releasing its liquid, steaming, darkening in color. You can smell it getting just more and more kind of toasty. And after a total of about 20 minutes, I want to say, pushed all of the mixture to the sides of the pan. Again, using a large cast iron skillet here, and poured in, I would say, about a quarter cup Marsala wine with just another splash, maybe a tablespoon of dry sherry. And those are the two cooking wines that I keep on hand just because they tend to cover most of the bases I'm trying to hit in my cooking. Again, Madeira, which is another fortified wine, I believe is traditional in this. Not something I typically keep on hand. So, yeah, you just do the best you can. A nice dry white wine would also be just fine. A red wine probably would lend too much earthiness to what is already a really, really earthy, kind of almost bordering on a little bitter flavor from the mushrooms. And so I would steer clear of red wine, but certainly white wine could be used. And so turn the heat up enough, again, kind of back to medium, so the wine was bubbling and getting evaporated. And then when that liquid was thickened with some of the caramelized juices from the mushrooms and the onion and butter on the bottom of the pan, just stirred all that together, mushrooms into the wine mixture. And then again, turn the heat down a little lower and let that continue to cook for maybe close to another 5 to 10 minutes, maybe closer to 10 maybe, on pretty low heat again, just so all of that wine flavor would evaporate, would be just fully cooked, flavors fully developed, before taking the pan off the heat and just making sure the mixture was spread out kind of evenly to cool. And, you know, the mixture goes from being, it was like almost soupy, a little bit soupy, when you first put it in the pan and you think, how is this going to, all this water going to cook out of these mushrooms, to being very, very thick and a texture that kind of holds a shape a little bit in the pan. I mean, you can mound it up and it doesn't flatten back out. It kind of stays. And that's the texture you're going for. You can tell that the duxelles are done. And again, they smell lovely, darkened in color, thickened up in their texture. And I let them cool on the stovetop for 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, before transferring them to containers, ones I knew I could put in the freezer, because this recipe freezes really, really well. And then you have it on hand for a nice little back pocket appetizer. You can pull out of the freezer, you know, an hour before you're expecting people to come over, and serve with some crackers or, you know, toasted baguette slices, kind of like having hummus around. It's, again, just so effortless once it's been made, and will preserve those mushrooms nicely for months in the freezer, or for about a week or so in the refrigerator. I like to use this in addition to the little puff pastries I mentioned. It's also great folded into scrambled eggs or an omelet. You can add it to a pasta sauce, can use it as a sauce on pizza dough instead of traditional red sauce or pesto. And if you're defrosting duxelles, a nice way to reconstitute it is to add a little bit of heavy cream, just maybe a quarter cup to, you know, cup or so of duxelles, maybe cup and a half, or you can stir in a couple tablespoons of creme fraiche, or even very soft goat cheese would be another great addition. Perk it up once it's been in the freezer with some fresh herbs, fresh dill. Chives would be lovely. Parsley, of course, and the fresh thyme, as I mentioned. And it's also kind of fun to take it in a little bit of a different direction and maybe even add some finely chopped oil-packed sun-dried tomatoes, or some very finely chopped kind of brine cured olives, or maybe even just a handful of capers. You don't want to go crazy because the duxelles itself is a strong flavor, but you can definitely put a few more little additions in there if you've made a large batch, so each one is sort of unique. You can also find another method for extending the shelf life of fresh mushrooms with quick pickling. And that's inspired by traditional Japanese cuisine, and the recipe for that is on my current blog, www.mailtribune.com/wholedish.